Bob McCown. It's John Shannon. It's the radio
talk
program
quick,
podcast.
Talk quick.
Whatever. I am talking
talk quick.
Quick.
Talk
as
quick.
Fast as I can. Zeisberger and DuPont, another look at the playoff rounds. It'd be nice if we got them right at the beginning of the rounds, but it's okay.
Well, the rounds, they kind of overlap now. So you have to kind of find a way to fidget it in. And it's Friday, and the producer thought that a Friday roundtable made some sense.
Yeah, I got to have second thoughts about the producer. Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com, Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe, and we come back after these messages. And so we commence for another day end the week. Yours truly, Bob McCowan. That's John Shannon, somewhere over there on the screen if you're watching.
Hello, Robert.
Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com, Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe join us. This is a recurring meeting that the four of us seem to have. Before we get into the four remaining playoff series and the pros and cons of all things involved with that, the Scheifele hit on Evans the other night was the main topic of conversation across the National Hockey League. And Scheifele winds up with four games. Question one, is it the right number, at least approximately, DuPont?
Not by a long stretch. I had it at 10. and I know he has no priors. You know, if we're going by the standard rhythm here, my bet then was that it would come one side or the other of three. So I had it 2-4. But on a personal level, no, because I just want this stuff done away with. You know, it's yet another series, another playoff where all the great stuff of the playoffs gets hijacked by an idiot who decides he's going to blow somebody up, has no chance of stopping the goal, has no intention of playing the puck or trying to strip the puck. Just his intention there is to blow the player up and hurt him. And he succeeded. And why a sport tolerates that is beyond me. And my only belief now, after all these decades of watching it as a kid, as a fan, then as a journalist, is it's just a sport that doesn't believe in itself enough, which I think is nuts, but that's the only conclusion I can make.
Zeisberger.
Well, first of all, I think, I respect Kevin so much, but his take is kind of oozing with irony a little bit for the fact that he covers one of my favorite players in the NHL, but Brad Marchand, who we've seen kind of cross that line a few times. But in all seriousness, it's kind of what I thought was going to happen here. Whether he was going to get it or not, that was up to the, for them to decide. And it was four games. Bob, I think one of the things that probably went into this is the fact that throughout that third period, Mark Scheifele looked like, there was a bird up his, he had gotten a penalty earlier in the period. He just had this kind of crazed look in his eyes, like he had lost control of his emotions. And I think that plays into it because, like Kev said, there was no attempt to get at the puck. The puck, for all intents and purposes, was in the net already. So it's just something that has to be, I agree with Kevin, it's something that has to be taken out of the game. And, we talk a lot about what the league does in terms of the punishment. But I think the NHLPA has to look at this too, because it's their own members that are cheap-shotting their own members. And at some point, they have to say, whoa, guys, you know what? We're all going, we know that those are your competitors, you want to play hard. But, injuring these guys, having guys taken off on a stretcher, that's got to be a warning sign for the PA as well.
One of the things that the National Hockey League has done, and I guess in many ways all sports have done, is mitigate the punishment in the playoffs as if a game suspension in postseason is significantly more punitive than a suspension during the regular season. And from a competitive standpoint, that argument holds water. The problem I have is that punishment should not be mitigated by the timing of the offense, at least theoretically in my mind. If I don't know whether you guys agree in any way, shape, or form, but if this was a regular season incident, surely it would be more than four games, wouldn't it? DuPont, to you first.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, and again, it's just another one of these contradictions that they're using a different currency because we're in the playoffs. Mm-hmm.
And so, why?
Yeah, well, and again, I only go back to it's been institutionalized, right? This is the way they've done it. You know, we watch officiating in the playoffs when it gets to the overtime. Anything goes. Why? I mean, if anything, you've got a bigger audience, a more engaged audience, and now the audience is learning. And I learned it too when I started watching at age 6 and 8. Oh, this is the way it's done, right? The guy puts his whistle in his pocket and everybody, you know, two hands, everybody. This is great. Well, it's not great. It just cheapens the product. Again, it goes back to faith, and ultimately, good players get beaten up. They get eliminated from series. The play suffers. The attention goes to places that it doesn't have to. I don't get it.
Zeisberger, throw your two cents in on that one.
Well, you know, what's the three key words that we've seen for decades, Kev, that we hear when the playoffs start? Quote, let them play, unquote. Whether we agree with it or not. And, you know, I think that they're looking for consistency. I think that's, I think, Bob, in this whole thing, that's what I think the players want more than anything, mm-hmm. is just be consistent from start to finish. If you're going to call something in the first period, call it in the third period.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I know Kevin's the hanging judge, so that's okay. I mean, we're allowed to have a hanging judge every once in a while. The concept of longer suspensions, let's remember, the first suspension ever levied by this commissioner was, correct me if I'm wrong, 21 games, I think was the number. It changed what Dale Hunter did against Pierre Turgeon. And the outcry was horrific. And we also talk about players policing themselves. This is a league that polices itself. The managers have so much say in how the game should be played. This is the 31, soon to be 32 guys sitting around a table saying, this is the standards we want to create a competitive league, rightly or wrongly. I'm not having an opinion. I am telling you exactly what the process is. And they want a certain standard in the regular season because they don't want their players to be overly injured for 82 games when we get back to an 82 game schedule. And then they want the intensity of playoff hockey, which I think we admit, even for instance, last night's Bruins Islander game was really darn entertaining played at that mm-hmm. level. And for all those people that are starting to watch the game looking for consistency, there's another group of people saying, wow, this is fun. This is great to watch. This is almost on the verge of a circus. And it's real. It's not like wrestling. It's real. And I think that there's a component of the audience that actually comes and enjoys playoff hockey for that very reason.
Well, but that's going to happen under any circumstance. Sorry, Kevin, but that's going to happen under any circumstance.
Not necessarily, Bob.
Oh, sure it is. I mean, in any sport, I mean, you're going to have diehards who are so in love with the game that it doesn't matter what the quality of the product is. I can take any crappy game in the playoffs or in a regular season and find you 100, 1,000, 50,000 people who think, oh, that was a great game. You know, we can sit here and argue the merit of a 1-0 game versus a 7-6 game in any sport. And you're going to get a divergence of opinion on it.
But here's the thing. I mean, you know, you and I, and for the most part, Mike, live in Southern Ontario. And coming off of a 7-game series that the Maple Leafs played, what was the talk of the town? Where was the playoff hockey in the Toronto Maple Leafs? Where was that edge? Where was all of that? Where was the pushback? I mean, Brendan Shanahan admitted his team didn't have enough grit to play playoff hockey. And that's a reality of what we're into. It's not a question of, well, they do set to, you know, it's subjective. They tell you from the beginning of time, this is the way we're going to do the regular season, and this is the way we're going to do the playoffs. You better adapt, and you better be prepared to adapt. Because in the end, a lot of people do think that it's pretty entertaining.
And there's no question it is entertaining. I think we're mixing a lot into the porridge here.
Sure we are.
And some of it is as the journalist or the fan in the stands, what I don't want to see to the officiating piece is the ticky-tack calls get called all the time, and the game has no flow to it, no form to it. There's the inconsistency part of it, but if it's consistently ticky-tack calls, I don't want that either. Last night, Clutterbuck puts a big hit on good, clean, stiff, terrific hit on Carlo, and Carlo ends up, it looks as like he's concussed. I have to believe he is. I got no problem with it. I mean, you know what? That's playoff hockey. Frankly, I see a lot of it in January too, or January most years. So I just don't want it to go to wrestling. I don't want it to be rollerball and demolition derby and guys stretch it off. So there's 95% of this, which is great stuff. And if there's a disparity between playoffs and regular season, I get that because it means more, right? The clock is ticking. Sure. I got to get myself to 16 W's, right? So sure, that's the way it should be. Even the NBA, as dreadful as that league is, that happens in the NBA too. So, you know, I'll accept that. It's just these far ends of ticky-tack bullshit calls that mean nothing, that accomplish nothing other than frustrating players, fans, and everybody else. And then guys, you know, this idiot from The Shining, Sheffley, who goes out and tries to dismember somebody. Really, look at it. Get that picture of Jack Nicholson. You know, I'm home, honey. That's him. Crazy. That's
bug eyes.
And I have to listen to fans saying, that's hockey. What?
What
you're saying, Kev, is that you don't, and as a Bostonian especially, you don't long for the day of Mike Milbury climbing into the stands at MSG and beating a guy over the head with his
Kevin going on this one, Mike. Come on.
McKenzie, that's 40.
That's the whole point. Get him going.
You know, 40 plus years ago, they also have electronic Zambonis now. I mean, things change. People change. And I'm a two-mouthed you-know-whatter about some of this stuff because as a kid, I loved it. 1969, the playoff series with Toronto, bloodbath and Forbes Kennedy taking on everybody but the pizza vendor. Terrific, right? I loved it. But that was 1969. Yep.
You didn't like Pat Quinn on Bobby Orr. You be honest now.
No, I hated it. And again, but you know what? I'd hate that today. I would. I did that to be Bobby Orr. It could have been anybody. It's these moments, and that's, I'm glad you bring this up because this is what's irked me for a while here. It's moments when you can be a predator and act just with no impulse control and actually go out to hurt people. You know what? I can do that at Home Depot if the urge hits me. You know, I don't like this guy looking over the paint can in aisle three. I can go two-hand him too. No different. You know, unsuspecting person doing nothing other than shopping. Sure, why not?
I got a couple of things here.
I tell you what, I don't want to go to your Home Depot, Kevin. That's the one thing. I want to stay. I'm going to go to Lowe's from now on just for that very reason.
A lawnmower.
I mean, let me address you use the phrase ticky-tack fouls.
Call the rule book.
Well, I don't see why a call in the regular season should be different from a call in the playoffs. I'll go beyond that and I'll tell you, I watch hockey, generally speaking, dispassionately. I'm not a big fan. I'll watch a big event. I'll watch a game if I have to. But if the game is on and I'm sort of half-ass paying attention and there's a penalty and there's a power play, I'm probably going to pay attention. Why? Because something might happen, like a goal. And at the end of the day, it's the entertainment business, and I want to be entertained. And not much entertains me with hockey other than goals being scored, and preferably good goals. Ones that I might remember for more than 15 minutes.
But do you think you're the norm, or do you think you're an exception?
Well, That is a question that is of no consequence to me because I don't care about anybody else, as you well know.
We know that. We've known that for 20 years, Bob.
Another news, the sun rises in the east.
That's right.
It does feel pretty special.
I don't give a crap about any of the three of you or any of the 3.5 million people that might watch this podcast. You're going to do what you're going to do, and you're entitled to your opinions, however stupid they might be. But I want entertainment, and power plays give me entertainment. So if you're not going to call the ticky-tack fouls, and you're going to have, you know, three minor penalties and three power plays in a playoff game, and that's not far from the truth, the playoffs mean a lot less to me. And then you play, you know, you can go out there and play ball hockey, kitty bar the door for, like the Toronto Maple Leafs did, for 50, 60, 82 games. Then you come to the playoffs and all of a sudden it's 1-0, 2-1, 3-2. It's all defensive hockey. Why is that more entertaining? I don't get it. The only thing that's entertaining is the value of the wins and losses in the game.
Well, as a hockey fan, would you rather
be entertained?
Okay. So as a hockey fan, when you are a hockey fan, Bob, would you rather lose 7-6 or win 1-0?
As a hockey fan?
Yeah.
I want to be entertained. So 7-6 is almost assuredly going to be more entertaining than 1-0.
No, I know. I think there are tons of people that when it gets to playoff time, all they care about is really their team winning. I mean, it changes. It changes.
Well, all that does is demonstrate the stupidity of hockey fans then.
It doesn't, you know, it, I don't, it doesn't mean that, it's no, right. Winning,
it just means well,
it doesn't mean
dumb.
You're right. It doesn't mean you're right either.
Are you going to watch any television show that doesn't entertain you? Like every other show, has got to be entertaining.
Sure it does. I agree with you 100%.
To be devil's advocate here, Bob, and I know you're a big baseball guy, so I'll take a shot here, but you want to talk about entertainment. What do they put when does something actually happen? What is the percentage? 26%, I think I heard, of balls that are actually put in play. I mean, Don Mattingly said it's almost unwatchable. So I don't disagree.
I'm with you. We're talking hockey, so that's what we're focused on. But I'm not trying to suggest that hockey is the only sport that has the same problem. You know, in essence, they all do. And the reason they all do is because you got a bunch of guys who have been in the business forever and believe the product is perfect and are not prepared to admit that it isn't.
I don't think that at all.
What is the number one league in the world? The National Football League.
Certainly in North America.
What is the difference between the National Football League and every other professional sport?
Entertainment.
They are not afraid
to change
the rules.
Yeah.
They are completely and utterly unafraid to change the rules. And they make a change, and if it doesn't work or they don't like what they saw, they change it back or they change it to something else. I have no particular love for the National Football League. It's completely money driven, but I admire them for that. Mm-hmm. And I will decry all the other leagues for being so resistant to looking themselves in the mirror and saying, this is a problem. We need to change it.
I would say, Bob, when the salary cap era came on, if you recall, the NHL did do a few things. They took out the center ice red line for the two-line pass so that at least there would be more stretching, more action. It'd be more north-south instead of east-west. So I do think that the NHL has attempted to do it, but maybe it just hasn't gone far enough.
I tell you what, when you look at the changes since the lockout of 2004, the changes the league has made across the board, whether it be the rule changes that have increased the speed of the game. It also created an ancillary part of maybe they got to be too fast. And all of these head hits and all these hits are a side effect of that. Plus what has happened with video review in the game. I mean, I don't think that there's lack of desire to change. I think that the problem becomes first of all, I know there isn't. But what there is within the NHL is the real, real cautionary side of this to say, okay, if we do this, what happens there? And that becomes the real challenge. I mean, when they moved to Mike's point, when they took the red line out and they allowed a lot more speed in the game, they also took the fact that goaltenders couldn't handle the puck behind the goal line very much. And that changed the speed of the ton time.
Bravo.
No. It's easy to be captain negative over there. It's really easy to be captain negative. It's a lot easier for you to be captain positive and defend everything that the game does.
Because you've been involved in it all your life.
Don't say that they haven't tried to change when they have tried to change, Bob. That's all I'm saying. There is the desire to change and make the game entertaining every day. We are here.
I want DuPont to get in here because I'm more interested in what he has to say so far than either of you two dum-dums. But
as usual,
an indictment on both sides.
We are here discussing the merits of the change of the elimination of the red line and the two-line pass, which happened when, Zeisberger?
15 years ago. 05, 06? Yeah, that's right. 15 years ago.
You are citing a rule that is 15 years old as evidence that the National Hockey League is not navel-gazing and is willing to make change.
Okay. I defer to Captain Positive on this.
Can we have Mr. DuPont weigh in on all of this nonsense?
Well, there's a number of things to weigh in, and I have to make a list. This is what age does. You have to make a list so you remember from one moment to the other.
Attaboy, whatever you need, pal.
Yeah.
Kevin's been writing notes all show.
But to build on your point about the NFL having it right, and again, the NFL is government. They just go down in the cellar and print more money if they need it.
Exactly.
But to build on one point there, do you think, guys, the NFL would suffer Shifley for more than 3 seconds? Shifley would be gone. Gone. There'd be no suffering. This is a league that protects the quarterback from a blindside hit, right? So, and that is what I love about the NFL. They don't suffer any fools because they don't have to, because they can go down to the cellar and crank out the money.
And crank out another player.
That's right. That's a bigger part.
Absolutely. And that's a very good point because of the feeder system of the U.S. colleges. Another point to your...
And non-guaranteed contracts.
Yeah, exactly. And another point about the officiating, this before we lose it, is, not only is there this sort of different rules over here for the postseason, regular season, the rest of it, how about watching McDavid get hacked and whacked, one end of the rink to the, no calls, nothing, right? Superstars, Crosby, I've watched it all the time, right? They call or don't call based on reputation of the player, on his skill level or his attitude. Watching, and Zeiss, you brought up Marchand, and a lot of Marchand stuff has just been crap, right? It hasn't been out to maim people. The slew footing at times is despicable. But, going and licking, Leo Komarov across the visor, good luck to you. I mean, who cares?
Well.
So that's all that crap is something else. But watching their superstars get fouled, and this very much speaks to change that needs to be in marketing. Those are the guys you want to play as long as they can. And instead, there's this attitude of, he'll get by it. He's the fastest guy in the game, and he'll find a way. Wrong.
Well, have we done enough on this topic? I didn't even know we had a topic on this, but.
Well, what did you think, Bobby? You haven't given your papal decision on the four games. Yes, come on now, Kevin. The hanging judge has 10. And what do you have, Bob?
Life.
I shouldn't be drinking coffee when you say that. Okay.
Well, I mean,
come on.
If it's, do I think it's the worst offense I've ever seen? I do not. I don't think it's anywhere near the worst offense I've ever seen. Having said that, it was a reckless, dangerous play that should not be permitted. And the problem...
You think it is?
I think it's 100% permitted.
Why is he suspended then?
He's got a 4-game suspension.
Jets could be out of the playoffs in 4 games.
He is suspended, but the action remains sustainable. That's their mistake always in these things, is they don't come out definitively enough to change behavior. this will happen again. It might happen to him, although he doesn't have that kind of record, which is kind of scary in itself. But this won't deter anybody from doing it. It won't.
Scheifele is one of the best players on the Winnipeg Jets. And he got a 4-game suspension. If Claude Thamalfichuk, some fifth line winger, did the exact same thing, what does he get? Maybe he gets 6 games. The point of the matter is that the National Hockey League quite obviously is concerned about high profile players, will always lean towards giving them lighter suspensions, and it has no desire to change the way the game is officiated, viewed, arbitrated, judged. It will tell you it doesn't like these hits. It will provide a suspension that is commensurate with what the media and public opinion believes that you should get, but it won't go any further.
Bobby, you just said that, you know, they're a little lighter on their star players, and
are you going
to
deny that?
I found a lot of the reaction to this is like 4 games. That's like 12 games during the regular season. How could they possibly give Scheifele that many? There's actually, I found in the reaction to this, and you can refer to these people for their opinions as idiots, as I know you will, but
including the coach of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have the reactions from them is, wow, you know, he had never done, he didn't have a history or a track record of doing anything like this. They thought it was harsh, you know, and I actually thought that in this decision, it was irrelevant whether he was one of their better players or not.
Well, you know, under the terms of the law on the street, a first-time offender for a minor offense is sometimes given leniency. But the further up the significance pole you go, the less that leniency becomes applicable. And second-time offenders, third-time offenders for anything other than a capital offense, the punishment is going to increase. So I understand Scheifele is a first-time offender. The significance to me of that is nothing. If you get to a third or a fourth offense, and there are plenty of guys in the National Hockey League that are there now and more.
That's your buddy Nas.
Well, there's a perfect example. How many times does this guy get to do what he has done repeatedly and come back? You know, Kevin said it earlier. The National Football League wouldn't tolerate it. They just say, get out. When is the National Hockey League going to do that? When is the National Hockey League going to recognize that you've got an ongoing problem with Naz Kadri and that he is showing no indication that he's prepared to, willing to, or capable of changing? And how many tickets does Nazem Kadri sell wherever he plays? And the answer is?
Minimum.
Zero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what are you keeping him around for? What is the mysterious thing that allows this league to do this crap over and over again? And I'll go back to the same thing. They don't want to hear from you or me or any of us. They want to run their league and they think they do it perfectly and they're going to keep doing it that way. And we can sit here and yak about it, which is perhaps entertaining, at least for us. It's going to change nothing. It's not going to change a single thing.
Well, look, my final word on this would be, and I'm going to circle back to something John said. Okay. Most of this stuff, if you've been to enough general managers meetings, okay, and owners meetings, this stuff is dictated by including rules, is dictated by what the GMs want and what the owners want. And so this goes far beyond the front.
That's
office.
The NHL. That's the league. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting that Gary Bettman is at fault. I'm not suggesting that Coley Campbell is at fault or anybody else at the top of the food chain. It's the game. It's the league.
Mm.
You know, last point, I mean, years ago, you could not go to an OHL game and not see a brawl.
Six fights. Yeah.
You're right.
Could not do it. That's gone. Things are changeable if you're willing to commit to changing. Mm-hmm. And I submit that the National Hockey League just, they're afraid of their own shadows. They're afraid to change the game, afraid they're going to lose fans. They believe the product is perfect and that they're right. And so they don't change.
Where I disagree with you here is they don't believe that it's perfect. They don't believe in themselves.
What do you mean by that, Kevin?
That's fair enough.
Underneath,
I'll buy that.
I think this is their fatal flaw. They don't believe how good it is. I mean, there is no other sport in playoff time, especially, that has as many subplots, intriguing storylines as the playoffs, because the injury factor, right? The physical factor, the serendipity factor. The ball doesn't go in the basket by mistake in the NBA. You know, I watched the winning goal by Marchand last night. No way that should end up in the net. There's another. So it is a circus. It's a wonderful circus in and of itself. All this crazy crap can happen. Puck goes in the net. Stupid call. No call. Nutcase takes a run, right? All that stuff is going. You can't find that anywhere. So why not believe in it? Why not govern it properly? Suffer no fools, and let it ride.
Here.
But
well said. I couldn't have said it better.
Funny, I would. I don't think you're wrong, but then I would say to you, I think that's what they're doing. Everything you said, Kevin, I can't disagree with. I love that. I love that aspect of what playoff hockey is, particularly. But what is it that they're not doing then that says they don't believe in themselves?
Well,
I want Kevin to answer this. Please.
Because that's a great question. It's degree. It's that they only pick at it. Four games for Scheifele is picking at it. The right thing to do is for the commissioner to walk in and says, I'm the commissioner. For the good of the game, this guy is out of here. Out. I suffer no fools. And I'm not going to have the product desecrated by this. I'm not going to have this kid maimed by an idiot. Out. And I'll see you in September. We'll talk about you coming back next year.
And then you got 30 general managers bitching at him. And the only one that doesn't is the guy who was the victim of that play.
And you also have the Players Association, who are now your business partners. It's not a question of lord and slave anymore. You have a business partner that says, hold on now. When we get more than five games, we get to go to a tribunal. I mean, there has to. I'm not disagreeing with you, Kevin. I just wanted you to explain it, because what's going to have to happen for this to go to that level is, it has to be collectively bargained. It has to be collectively bargained. Yeah. And the players have to buy into it. The players and the Players Association have to want to do it too. And let's give it a try. But I don't think it's as simple as Gary walking. In fact, I would tell you, the last collective bargaining agreement said to Gary, you can't walk in and do it anymore. Because checks and balances, appeals, third party arbitrator,
Well, now you're getting into the stupidity that the players are just as stupid as everybody else, and arguably more stupid. And that is evidenced every time there is a hearing where, the Players Association will defend the accused to the nth. While there is somebody lying in one of their other representatives or one of the other players they represent is lying in a hospital bed. Explain that.
Well, I can't. I can't, Bob.
You can't?
No, I can't. But I'm just saying.
All it says is, who gives a flying fadoo what the Players Association says, because they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth at the same time.
Nazem Kadri does this, three times in 4 years? And then actually appeals?
Well, then, but did you read the ruling? Admits to it doing it. He just says he got too many games. So he actually says, yeah, I did it. I did hit him in the head. I know it's against the rules. But why do I get eight games?
Oh, again, we've got a lot of cases. We've got Rafi Torres. We've got Tom Wilson.
Oh, we could be here all night.
Yeah. Right. You know, you can roll them all up. But the reason I'm bringing up other names here is it just goes on and on. Rather than eradicate it, clean it up, make it a better, let all these other good storylines, you know, that I enumerated, let those carry the day. This will just like fighting in the OHA, it'll go away and people will like the product. Don't be afraid of being liked. That's why we're here.
We got to take the break and we'll switch gears. Time is going to be our enemy here in a minute, but four series ongoing. We'll kind of wade through those when we come back after these messages. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon, Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com. Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe are here. Well,
we talk hockey.
We have been, John. I know. No. I know that's.
You no, I'm talking what's on the ice, Bob. I'm talking related. What's on the ice. Come on.
Come on, what?
I'm saying we're positive. I'm trying to be positive. You know, talk about the games, how great the games are.
Well, it's interesting. You only bring that up when we talk about hockey. When we talk about other sports, you're more than happy to slag the crap out of them.
Oh, stop it. That's not true. You know,
Bruins,
that.
Islanders. Are you surprised by how close this series apparently is and will continue to be? Mr. DuPont, it is your hometown team.
I'm not surprised. I thought, you know, you could pick either side in six or seven. I picked the Bruins in six because I like the fact that they've got better scoring across the first and second lines. They finally got dependable 5-on-5. Rask is one of the handful of excellent goalies in the league. All that stuff. Terrific coaching as well. Thought their vulnerability was defense. It's even more underscored now because I think Carlo's going to be gone for a while with a concussion. And they've already lost Miller, or hoping Miller comes back. They've lost Kampfer. They've lost Moore to surgery. So they're getting thin back there. The Islanders don't score much, but they've got terrific structure, discipline. Trott's a terrific coach. So again, rule book, rules, serendipity, all of it, a real close series. And I suspect it will go six or seven and it will be a coin flip.
The amazing thing for me is that this is a team that 12 months ago on the back end had Zdeno Chara, had Tory Krug. Those guys are not there now, obviously. And they're getting even thinner with every game. And yet whoever they put in there, it's, you know, kind of like that Patriots saying, and it was interesting to see the hoodie Bill Belichick wearing his Bruins cap the other day, but next man up. And it's amazing because that back end, by all, you know, when you look at it on paper, should be a flaw after Charlie McAvoy and maybe Grislick. And these guys have been playing over their heads. But then again, you know what, guys? We could say that about the entire New York Islanders team, and all of a sudden you look at what Lou Lamoriello has done there. Since Lou left Toronto, he's won four playoff series and is in the middle of a fifth. So given what we've gone through here in Southern Ontario, Lou's doing a pretty good job. So I think the case can be made for both these teams that they have done very well of playing over their weaknesses.
Shannon?
Well, I tell you, to me, the Islanders are like gnats. They just keep coming at you. They don't stop. It's, you know, it's the next guy over the boards. And for me, on the positive side, is that's really impressive that no matter who they put out there, they're going to play the same way. The disappointment for me from an Islander perspective, and we saw a glimpse of it last night, is that Matthew Barzal is an elite hockey player. But he's been made, and in my opinion, at times he's been made ordinary because of the system. Mm-hmm. But you know, he scores last night, and for a glimpse, for about a 5 or 6 minute glimpse, you saw that fire in his eyes one more time, as opposed to playing the system, which was fun to watch. The other thing on the other side of the ledger is that I think the reason the Bruins have played so well at times defensively is because their forwards buy in better than anybody else too. And I'm talking about forwards that have never bought into playing defense before. Dare I mention Taylor Hall?
Taylor Hall.
I mean, setting up the Craig Smith goal last night was a back check by Taylor Hall. And that's where the influence of whether it's Bruce Cassidy or particularly, I think, his teammates, guys like Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak, I think team defense, I think the Bruins do it masterfully. And then you do have Rask on top of that, who had an unbelievable overtime period before the goal was scored and made two great saves and gave the Bruins life and a chance to score that winning goal.
Moving on, I tend to agree with DuPont here. I think the Bruins are the favorites in this series, definitively. You don't overlook the possibility the Islanders could pull off magic, but the Bruins should be the better team. Tampa Bay, Carolina is a little closer, and that's interesting because you have the defending Stanley Cup champions who have their best player back, I guess. And this Carolina team, you could have said, is a bit of a mirage during the regular season. Who knew? But I'm not sure who the better team in that series is. Z?
I wouldn't say that I'm not surprised by Carolina. I saw glimpses of it last year. I think that their top six forwards, you know, when you go Svechnikov and Aho is just a wonderful, wonderful player. I think that as much as, you know, we talk about him, he may be one of the more underrated guys or less publicized guys for his skill level. There's a reason the Habs went after him and gave him that offer sheet. But even on defense, when, you know, Hamilton and Pesci and we can go down the list. I'm not surprised by Carolina. What I am surprised at is that they went with the rookie goaltender this far until they changed it up last night. But I think that Carolina, of all the teams that kind of could surprise in these playoffs, they were the ones that I kind of pointed to and said, watch out for them. Trouble is, you're going up against a Tampa Bay team that learned to play a different style last year, won the cup, and knows what it means to win. I'm just totally intrigued by this series.
DuPont.
I have to say, if I were a betting man, and I guess we're all going to be betting men the way the industry is going.
Odds are.
Yeah, odds are. So I gave Carolina no chance in this series. I was surprised last night. I wasn't able to watch, but I was surprised to look up last night and they never trailed. They got up two and it goes to OT. So good for them. I'm a little bit sort of, I guess, biased because I saw Brendan Moore badly outcoached by Cassidy the last time they met in the playoffs. Bruins ran him out of the building in four straight. So I'm just not that impressed by them. That said, obviously what they've done here is impressive. Especially as I was talking with the rookie goaltender, I'm just a huge believer in Cooper and Tampa's ability to score, their grit factor.
Grit factor that they learned to play with last year, Kev.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And brought in some significant pieces at the end to fill that out. There's just so much I like about it. I love the goaltender. They're everything about them. I just think that they're a far better team.
Well, you know, they're only a deflection away of being up 3-0. Let's face it. They're a deflection off Jordan Staal's knee of being up 3-0. They are so reminiscent for me of teams that we have seen in previous decades that are on the verge of being dynastic. You know, the Leafs of the 60s, Montreal of the 70s. Maybe even the Islanders of the 80s, because role players come and make such a difference. Alex Killorn has been so good for this team in these playoffs. I mean, I would tell you right now, if everybody talks about, you know, the big guys and Kucherov's got all the points and, you know, and I hate doing this, but Conn Smythe, you know, playoff MVP, second round, we shouldn't even be talking about it. But I'll tell you, I think Alex Killorn has been the most valuable player or the best forward for this team through the first two rounds. That's how good I think he's been. And he's not even on the top six at times.
Right.
That's how good and deep they are. And you know, nobody's won a home ice game yet in that series. But I fully expect that will change quickly.
Vegas, Colorado play tonight. Colorado wins both games at home, the first two at home. A blowout in the first game, which maybe you can attribute to Vegas going through seven and Colorado sweeping the opening round. Maybe. Maybe you can attribute it to a curious decision for Vegas to change their goaltending. Game two was an overtime game. An overtime game could have gone either way. But I get the sense that all year long, the team everybody has been looking at, especially you two hockey pucks, is Colorado.
There's three of us here. Three hockey pucks.
Yeah, but he's got some hope for me and Zeiss. He's got no hope. None.
The Colorado's it. Like, Colorado's the team everybody's got their eye on.
Yeah.
Still agreed, Z?
Yeah. I mean, I had them. I picked them before the season to beat Tampa in the final. I don't change my mind now. And I think that what we forget sometimes is that how good this Colorado team was last year before their goaltending situation, where the guys were going down like dominoes, and it ended up being Michael Hutchison, that their season relied upon. Right. And I just think the way that we saw Grubauer the other night play was outstanding. This is a team that hasn't needed a goalie to win them a game very much, but when they did, he was there. And the other thing, guys, this Rantanen and Landeskog-McKinnon line, they played six games and they've combined for 34 points. So, you know, yeah, you can say, oh, well, teams will change up their defense against them. Well, every team tries to do that. And I think, you know, we talk about the entertainment factor. I think that right now, watching the Colorado Avalanche skate at a different speed than it seems everybody else is wildly entertaining and fun to watch.
Vegas got any chance, Kevin?
I'm sorry, I missed it.
Has Vegas got any chance in this series?
I don't think so. I was gonna build on Mike's point there. He brought up all that and didn't mention Cale Makar.
Right.
Which,
well, I got to leave something for you, Kev.
That's right. So such a terrific player, and so as much as I love Tampa, I love Colorado plus and the fact of there being Makar, and totally agree with everything that Zeiss has said there. I will go back to where you started.
By the way, if you're bringing up a defenseman, Victor Hedman's on the line for you, but enough of that.
I know. And you talk about distinguishing factors, right? I mean, Killorn, yes, but I love him. So the point I was going to make, though, Bob, from where you kicked this portion off was, I really think, you know, the Players Association should sit down and talk about getting to the next series after playing seven within 48 hours. If there's a bargaining point to be made, I would say that next series for that team, you got to wait 72 hours. Give them a couple days.
Yeah.
Because that's what led to the goaltending decision, you know, the fatigue factor and all of that. So that would have been the easiest bet in town in my mind, and proved to be.
So we have those three series. I don't think anybody would argue the favorites are in front. Montreal, Winnipeg,
no way.
Not so much.
Might be now, though.
It's one game. It probably doesn't necessarily mean a lot. Montreal, if I remember, in the first round beat the Maple Leafs in the first game and then lost three straight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we know what happened then. The curse of the Ballard.
We got to have a better name than that. We got to have a better name than that. Yeah, curse of the Ballard. Be. Come on.
Well, the Ballardino. The point of this, I guess, to me is, you start wondering about if we really misread this Montreal team, or are they just playing like they got magic in their pants? Because they shouldn't have beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they shouldn't beat the Winnipeg Jets, especially after the Jets looked like they corrected all the flaws that they had late in the regular season by wiping out Edmonton. They shouldn't be this good. What the hell's going on? Who are these guys?
Here's one of the things, Bob, too, is the fact that, yeah, Carey Price has played great.
Oh, he's played good. He's played well, but he hasn't stolen games.
No, that's exactly my point. Maybe we should have seen this a little bit in last year's playoffs in the bubble when they disposed of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You can say what you want about the Penguins. They still had Malkin. They still had Crosby.
Yeah, a lot of changes in Montreal, though. This isn't really the same team.
But who are the guys that are coming through? Yeah. The young guys, Kotkaniemi, Suzuki, Shea Weber, who, was banged up at the beginning of that Toronto series. With every single game, you've seen more of the Shea Weber that we're accustomed to seeing, save for the fact that he had a breakaway the last game. And I looked outside to see if Haley's Comet was going by, because that's about how often that happens. But the other thing about the Montreal Canadiens is that's got to be impressive is their starts, Bob. And the fact that they've won four games in a row. They have not trailed once in those four games. And in those four games, they've jumped out to leads of 3-0, 2-0, 3-0, 2-0. So you know what? I give Dominic Ducharme credit because whatever buttons.
Well, we're giving him credit. I'm trying to say, why didn't you pea brains pick Montreal then? If this isn't shocking, it's shocking, isn't it?
Because I tell you what, before Kevin jumps in, let me tell you, I think that what we didn't see from Montreal, particularly the last 20 games of the regular season, was. It was such a compacted schedule for them. They played so many games in such a few period of time because of the COVID issue, and they didn't have Carey Price in goal. And they didn't have Carey Price in goal. Jake Allen and Caden Primo. Yeah.
Weber, no Gallagher.
Yeah.
Kevin?
Well, I have to preface this by saying, as the guy who grew up in Boston here, it is so heartwarming, finally, to see the Habs get a break in life. It's made my spring, really has.
We could have a Montreal Boston Stanley Cup final coming.
Fine by me, especially now. So I would say that at the risk of pissing off 3.2 million of the 3.2 million viewers, I just think it underscores what clay pigeons the Leafs were. That team could beat this Leafs team. If Shanahan at all.
By the way, you ain't pissing them off because they're pissed off enough. Believe me, you can't get any higher.
Well, they should be. I mean, that should have been over in four based on skill level, right? So that's shocking. And I'm trying to come up with a parallel. A lot of people here in Boston are still not over 1971. That the powerhouse Bruins went in and got smoked by the seven games by Canadiens. Well, guess what? Canadiens had 10 Hall of Fame players in the lineup. That's not this Montreal team, right?
No. Oh, no, it isn't.
I don't know where those guys are going. So that shouldn't have happened. Toronto's got to really look at that. And to me, it's obvious. They've spent their $40 million on four guys up front, and the rest of it is just cannon fodder by my eye.
There's lots of reasons why Montreal's doing this. Do not underestimate the role of a guy like Corey Perry, who has been through the wars, knows how to play this grinding playoff hockey better than everybody else, probably on the ice on both teams, and has probably achieved a place as a pseudo assistant coach in that room to tell guys, hey, listen, here's what to expect. I think Corey Perry deserves a ton of credit for A, signing in Montreal, because he wanted to sign in Toronto. Signing in Montreal and playing a really key role in helping a lot of guys get through that first round playoff series.
Well, and what is exciting is to see a team like this start to believe in itself. This is another great, and often the storyline in the playoffs.
A fairy tale.
A team with middle of the road talent start to believe in itself, get some good goaltending, play honest, structured hockey. And beat the perceived behemoths. I just don't think the Leafs were the behemoth that many perceived.
I'm with you, the argument has been made and will continue to be made that the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't get beaten by Montreal. The Maple Leafs got beaten by themselves.
Yep.
And yet, and we are only one game in. They went into Winnipeg and beat Winnipeg too. Mm-hmm. So that's the intriguing thing as we get ready for game two in that series.
Winnipag can still win the series though, Bob. Winnipeg can still win. They're a good deep hockey team. But if they don't have Scheifele, well, we know we don't have Scheifele for four games. And then the question mark is whether Paul Stastny will be ready for the rest of the series is another question. So,
well, we've seen plenty of cases of underdogs who come into the postseason or championship series or championship games, and you think they got no chance, and they pull a rabbit out of their hat. Is this Montreal team that team? None of us think so, but we can't be sure, at least not yet. Boys, we have kept you longer than we should have. I blame Shannon for being overtly verbose.
Oh, my goodness. That's a four-game suspension right there.
I, of course, had nothing to do with this.
Kevin, I would second that.
We will bid you a fond adieu at least for a couple of weeks or whenever.
End of the next round. They'll be back. They'll be back for the conference finals, the semifinals.
Thank you to both of you. And we'll see you anon. Mike Zeisberger, Kevin Paul DuPont. Unfortunately, Shannon and I will be back, albeit briefly, after these messages. And we're back. And again, our thanks to Mike Zeisberger, Kevin Paul DuPont for joining us. One quick thing.
Yes, sir.
Off of hockey. The LA Lakers lost last night to the Phoenix Suns and have been eliminated from the playoffs. If I'm not mistaken, it's the first time LeBron has lost in the first round.
I think you're right. I mean, it makes you wonder. I think knowing LeBron, knowing the Lakers, I would not be surprised to see changes made there. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, player
to
changes or coaching both, change?
Both.
Well, their supporting cast clearly isn't good enough.
They should have traded for Kyle Lowry to get a point guard. They should have given the Raptors enough to get a point guard for that team.
Well, because perhaps that would have got them by Phoenix, although you know I have been more than lukewarm on this Phoenix team for
yes, I know. I know.
I've been saying watch out for these guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether they're a championship team yet, but they're pretty good.
And the Chris Paul story alone
is a fantastic story. And he's wounded.
Yeah.
He's playing at half mast.
Yeah.
You know, if he was healthy, yeek. I'm not sure they're not the favorite to win the West. I know Utah's good.
Utah's really good, Bob.
I know they're good, but I'm not counting this Phoenix team out. This is something.
I tell you what, I know that Jamal Murray's not playing and he won't be back, but that Denver team is really good too.
Well, they're good too, but you know what?
They might have my favorite player in the NBA on right now. He's amazing.
I'll tell you what, John, we got to go. I would love if Phoenix wins this for this reason. They essentially didn't do anything the way the other teams are doing things now, loading up with the two or three stars.
Right.
We know Brooklyn has done it. We know Oklahoma City did it. They had it and gave it away. The Lakers did it. Miami did it when they won a championship. Even Cleveland went out and got guys and to help. Phoenix really hasn't.
No, that's what I like about both Phoenix and Utah. I think Utah's done it the same way.
Utah's is sort of the same thing.
Yeah,
it'd be nice to see one of them win and observe what happens in the offseason with all of the big name free agents. Maybe all of a sudden, the process of how you build a champion might be altered once again.
Indeed.
We'll see you. Have a nice weekend, Mr. Shannon.
I will try if I don't get suspended.
And well, there's always that.
Yeah.
Of course, if the National Hockey League is giving you the suspension, it'll probably be for 2 minutes.
I'll be ready for Monday then.
We'll see you Monday. Thank you all for watching, listening, or whatever the hell you're doing. See you then. Goodbye, everybody.